Hello, and thank you for tuning in to the Indiana Athletic Trainers Association podcast, hosted by the Young Professionals Committee. The views and opinions expressed by speakers, guests, or others who have provided materials to and for this podcast are not necessarily those of the IATA. The IATA assumes no responsibility for, nor endorses any of the comments, recommendations, or materials that are provided. Do you need CEUs? Check out the IATA website, where you can find a link to EBP Central, working in collaboration with athletic trainers to continue Indiana's tradition of excellence.
Thank you everyone for tuning into the IATA podcast today. My name is Scott Sell. I am the IATA Communications Chair. Joined today by Daniel Welty, who is our IATA YPC Chair. We're here to talk about COVID, continue our COVID podcast series. Daniel works in the physician practice setting, so he's going to enlighten us today of what we should expect in that setting when our athletes go to that setting, and for our colleagues who work in that setting. So he's going to give us all the details of what to expect in the physician practice. But first, we're going to let Daniel introduce himself, and we'll go from there.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me on the show. Again, my name is Daniel Welty. I work at Franciscan Physician Network, and I work within the sports medicine specialist department. I work alongside a primary care sports medicine physician, doing the day-to-day clinical duties. I've been with Franciscan since July of 2019. Before that, I was at Illinois State University, where I got my post-professional master's degree in athletic training. And then while I was there, I was also working at a high school in Central Illinois. Before that, I graduated from the University of Indianapolis in 2017 with my Bachelor's of Science degree in athletic training. I also believe that many athletic trainers should be involved in professional service. And so, like Scott said, I am the Young Professional Committee Chair of the IATA. You probably also have seen me, athletic trainers within Indiana, run around with my camera at GLADA or IATA annual meetings. So just something fun to do and give back to the profession. Outside of athletic training, just enjoy spending time with family, friends, hunting, and photography. So, and then also I have no conflict of interest, and any words I say today are my own and not those of my employer or of the IATA.
Awesome. Daniel, thank you for joining us. I'm a fellow Greyhound as well. So go Hounds. It's always good to talk to another one. So, but today, physician practice, athletic trainer, physician practice. Obviously, COVID has affected every segment of society, especially those of us in healthcare. Take us back to the beginning when COVID first hit Indiana. What happened? How did you guys adjust and adapt on the fly? And then just kind of walk us through the timeline of the last couple months of how has Franciscan and the physician practice adapted and overcome from COVID?
Yeah. I think like many athletic trainers in Indiana and or in the Great Lakes region, we were up at the GLADA annual meeting, and that's when, you know, there was limiting public gatherings, and a lot of hospitals were limiting travel and limiting travel outside the United States or within states. And so I kind of got back from that meeting when that was cut short, and back on Monday. And Monday morning, we kind of just, myself, I work with Dr. Ryan Taylor, the primary care sports medicine physician, as well as our front desk individual. And we just got together, had a little powwow that Monday, and was like, okay, what do we want to do with our schedule? Because Franciscan was like, okay, you only need to see essential visits. So things like fractures, like we have to be seeing those, we have to manage those correctly. Just anything that's long-term consequences, we had to make sure that we were seeing those. So we just had a little powwow and just decided to allow Dr. Taylor to what we call run the schedule. And what he does is go through the schedule and says, okay, this is a central visit. This could be a telephone visit, or this could be, we'll just schedule out. And so that's what we were doing at first. We were doing essential visits, telephone visits, or just scheduling people out. Some people that, you know, maybe were, you know, just general knee pain, you know, knee arthritis or something like that. You know, it was like, okay, we don't really need to talk to you, but we can schedule you out about 4 weeks or so. We didn't really know where COVID-19 was going. So we were kind of just kind of going on the fly and just trying to figure out as we went. So we kind of did that for a few weeks. And then a couple weeks later after that, we had access to do virtual visits. That really changed the game for us a little bit, because it allowed us to actually see somebody using video and audio and not just audio, which is really beneficial. So we can look at patients. You know, patients can say, we can say, where's your pain? And the patients can point to where their pain is, right? We can have them do range of motion, you know, so we can kind of see a little bit more, do a little bit more of an exam versus just over the telephone. Sometimes it's hard for patients or making that translation through just telephone. So audio or video and audio together using virtual visits, that was really beneficial. So we started to see a lot more patients that way. We still did some telephone visits with patients that didn't have access to do virtual, or sometimes, you know, virtually, you know, internet connection's bad, or, you know, my microphone wasn't working, I couldn't hear them, or whatever that case may be. So we were able to just use the telephone, which was still beneficial for the patients, especially if they needed pain medication or just something to get them through this process. So that was kind of our first kind of segment there as far as that initial, what we did on a day-to-day basis.
How did that work with your virtual visits? Obviously, that's going to be much different than an in-person visit. What was that dynamic like with you and Dr. Taylor? I would assume you would usually go into the room first, do the history and the physical exam and all that, and then come out and present that information to Doc, and then he goes in and whatever. How did that work virtually? Were you able to run the same basic methodology, or did that virtual visit look a lot different than your in-person visits from a structural standpoint?
It actually worked pretty well. It almost is like an office visit. So what our front desk person would do, they would kind of do more of a check-in process the day before when they would call to confirm the appointment, and just making sure that they had everything, their insurance card, all that stuff. The day of the appointment, I would send them the link to be able to get virtually, and then I would, you know, quote unquote, room them. Ask those questions, take a detailed history, and then present that to Dr. Taylor. And then what would happen, a lot of times I kind of see the patient before and after the visit. So sometimes Dr. Taylor may order a home exercise program, or may say, hey, they need an x-ray. Can you give them information on where to go? So I would be able to connect back with them after their visit with Dr. Taylor, and be able to give them that information, or tell them, hey, I'm going to send you a home exercise program, or I'm going to send you, you know, an information from Amazon to get a brace, you know, that I found for you. So it was kind of really beneficial in that way, just to kind of see the patient before and after the visit. So we worked pretty similar, again, a little bit different, something new to our society as a virtual visit goes.
Sure. So now we're July essentially, and we're getting ready to go back to sport participation at the high school level, but for you guys, are you guys back to normal now? What does clinic look like now? You know, COVID's still here, but kind of post COVID, what's the new normal look like for you guys in clinic?
Yeah. So, when Indiana kind of, had their, you know, plan to get back to, you know, opening at 100% capacity, we were kind of using that as a time frame. Franciscan was, they rolled out a plan. And so we had a couple weeks of 25%, 50%, 75%, and now we're at 100% capacity, seeing patients. Obviously, if we can use virtual and do it that way, or if a patient can't get out for some reason, then we can use virtual to be able to do a visit. But yeah, so we're at 100% capacity, seeing patients. Actually, just the other day, we saw 23 patients in a day. Which is great, just to get these people back. Sometimes it's in sports medicine, I think many athletic trainers can relate. Sometimes it is hard to do an evaluation. Sometimes it is hard to do an MSK evaluation, because you need to put your hands on them, really figure out what's going on, do a special test and those types of things. So some of those patients that we were kind of getting through the shutdown, we have now been able to see back in clinic. So we're operating at 100%. But again, people wearing face masks, social distancing, making sure we're getting patients in and out, and just doing all the necessary precautions.
Yeah, that's a great lead to my next question. What's your attire now? Are you wearing a mask and goggles and things like that, or what's that look like for you now?
The only additional thing that we're wearing in office is a face mask, as well as our patients are wearing face masks. Again, just making sure we're limiting the spread there. We don't have to wear goggles or anything like that. Obviously, if that was something I wanted to do, I definitely could, just a little extra protection. But yeah, just face mask.
Yeah. For the patients, is there screening being done at the hospital? Like, what if I'm an athletic trainer and I'm making an appointment for my student athlete, what should I tell them when they go to see you and Dr. Taylor?
Yeah, so again, our front desk does an amazing job at making sure that we're screening the patients when we call to confirm appointments. I kind of call it double screening. When she calls that, she screens them. And then when they come into our office, she will ask those same exact questions, and she will also get a temperature on them, and she will make sure that each patient has a face mask with them. So for a long time, we're in a medical office building, our main location, four stories. We actually had a couple individuals from Franciscan that were downstairs that were screening temperature every single patient. So they would get a little name tag with the date on it and their temperature. So that was really helpful just to keep the entire building safe. Sure. But now our front desk is taking on that responsibility. So really keeping, just make sure everybody's safe. And obviously if anything's positive or there's a higher temperature, you know, she'll come back and grab myself or Dr. Taylor.
Is there anything you guys aren't doing? Like, are you still doing the injections and the MRs and the x-rays? That's all, everything's status quo now for you guys. Everything's back to normal. Life is normal except for face mask in your practice.
I would say pretty much so.
Yeah.
I think also the, you know, our cleaning procedures haven't really changed, but our frequency of cleaning has changed.
Sure.
If that makes sense. So again, normally somebody at a front desk counter, if they would touch it, we wouldn't necessarily clean that before COVID-19, but now we're like, if they touch one little surface, we're making sure we clean it. So I think that would be the only additional thing that we're doing a little bit differently. But yeah, everything's kind of back to normal in a sense for us.
Now, you are not working with a surgeon.
Correct. So that's one of the things I wanted to talk about today was the difference between a primary care sports medicine physician and an orthopedic physician. Athletic trainers, our training is very sports medicine based because it's non-surgical. That's what primary care sports medicine is. It's non-surgical. We do injections and we call those procedures, but we're not doing a surgery like an ACL reconstruction. In athletic training, we don't really dive a whole lot into orthopedics. We do talk about like ACL, for example, and the different graft types. Unfortunately, because it's common, we do talk about that. But there's just a lot different aspect to orthopedics. Now, the athletic trainer is very skilled in sports medicine and orthopedics to be a great addition to a physician practice. So that's the main difference is surgery, I would say, between sports medicine and orthopedics. So that's kind of where I wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, can you talk about the orthopedic surgery part of the house? Like, what if we have an athlete? You know, I'm thinking I oversee an outreach department, and we have several athletic trainers, and we have an athlete who needs surgery. What's that going to look like for them? Are there new screening processes? Is surgery going to take longer to get to? Those types of things.
Yeah. At Franciscan, we have a little bit different. Our sports medicine department and our orthopedic department are two different departments.
Okay.
I think at many hospitals, those are combined, and which is fine. Either way works. But from a surgery standpoint, if somebody's going to get surgery, obviously they're doing the screenings, they're having that initial consultation, you know, that MRI is getting done. You know, some of these things are just taking a little bit longer, again, just for the cleaning processes and things. But the patient will also get a COVID-19 test before they have surgery, just to make sure that is negative before they go into surgery, just so we don't have any complications there. But everything else is relatively normal. Even physical therapy is opening back up to normal. Again, just social distancing and cleaning things. And so they're having a little bit less because they have a lot of direct contact with the patients.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's great. You know, as we look at athletic training as a whole, it's interesting to see how each segment of the profession is working and functioning. And it's cool how what you're doing in the physician practice is going to tie directly into what folks are doing in secondary school, and how that collaboration still applies to each other, which makes it even easier. You know, as we look at the physician practice, and for our non-athletic training listeners, I think it's often misunderstood or not known why would you have an athletic trainer in physician practice compared to a nurse or an MA or any other of the numerous medical professions. But why an athletic trainer, and why does that make sense? I think a lot of our non-AT listeners would be interested to know that why.
Yeah, I think definitely within the sports medicine practice, or even within an orthopedic practice, because of our education and our training, that flow to a physician practice is really easy. Again, I worked in the high school setting, and then I transitioned into the physician practice. And when I started at Franciscan, I didn't really need to learn the terminology of sports medicine. I didn't need to learn, you know, what is a Jones fracture. Like, I didn't have to go look up that information. I already had that knowledge within me. My biggest things were learning how to use the EMR, because I'd never used it before. Everyone's going to have a learning curve to a new job, but it's definitely decreased because of our training and education. We get kind of compared, I think, sometimes in the physician practice to medical assistants. There's great medical assistants out there. Do not get me wrong, not to degrade or, you know, put down their profession. But they have a limitation on what they can do. Them rooming a patient, getting a history and doing vitals, like, those are the things that they can do. But some of the things that I provide that are a benefit are, one is a patient calls to the office, because I have a license to practice in the state of Indiana, I can give out medical advice. So the patient goes, hey, can I put ice on this injury? A medical assistant would have to say, well, I'm going to have to ask the physician. Whereas I can say, yeah, go ahead, you can do that, that's okay. So what that does, in instances, that's just a one instance, what that does is it gives the physician more time to do things maybe that are more important. It frees them up to be able to get better at their skills and doing some other things. So really giving them time. What it also does is it increases efficiency within our clinic. So I don't have to interrupt him during clinic and say, hey, can this person put ice, or can they use Tylenol? Like, I can answer those questions for the patients. What it also does for the patient is it increases their satisfaction and experience, because they're getting the answer right then and there, right? And typically when a patient has one question, they have two questions, three questions, right? So I can be able to answer those questions. Obviously, there's some things that, again, a new job, new setting, some different things that you're doing, and depending on the physician you're working with, different things there, but you pick those up really easy. But the medicine of it doesn't really change.
I think that's a really great point that people often misunderstand, I guess, for lack of a better word, is that we are able to deliver that advice directly because we are a licensed healthcare practitioner, compared to having to go answer or ask the question of the asked question, right? There's two steps that we're one stop shop that can deliver that answer. I think as we look at growing the profession, one of the things that we're able to do in Indiana is reimburse for athletic training services through our state practice act. And that's mainly done in the outpatient rehabilitation setting. But I'm curious if you guys have explored that in the physician practice setting, what that looks like for you guys. I know there's some incident tube billing and things like that can be done. Talk about, one, the importance of our state of practice that allows us to do all that, and two, what could that look like in a physician practice?
Well, I think having a great practice act in Indiana, it gives us the ability to either do the things that we want to do. You know, the traditional setting is for everybody. The physician practice isn't for anybody. So it gives athletic trainers an opportunity to open up new doors, find new avenues. I think what it also does from a reimbursement standpoint, it begins to show our value. And when we can show our value, and when you can put a physical therapist, an occupational therapist, an athletic trainer side by side, and they can all bill the same CPT code and get reimbursed the same, you know, why would you pay anything different between the three other than years of experience, right? But sure, the amount of money should be the same if they're billing consistently, getting reimbursed. So what physical therapy has done, then they have showed that, right, to then raise their salaries. And so I think that's where we go.
Yep.
Specifically in our practice, that's one of the things that I'm accumulating data to kind of find that value. Where am I valuable? How do I save the physician time? But how do I also generate direct revenue and indirect revenue? So let me explain that. So first is I do all the casting and splinting, and I also do home exercise programs. So those things are billable experiences as long as I, you know, spend the amount of time and do the things correctly. The physician actually bills that underneath his MPI, but those are what I'm doing. And so those, that's kind of my, what I'm considering my direct revenue that I can go off, even though it's his MPI, you know, it's still what I'm doing in the office. And so how does that indirectly affect? Well, instead of the physician doing the cast, he can go see another patient. Right. So then you have another office visit, and then how many more follow-up visits are you going to have? So it's a really a trickle effect for me being able to use my skills that I know that I'm specialized and trained in to be able to help the physician in that part to see more patients and generate more revenue.
Sure. Yeah, that's a great point. When we look at direct versus indirect, I think that applies to a lot of athletic training, not just physician practice, but athletic trainers in an outpatient rehabilitation setting. Athletic trainers working in secondary school and collegiate athletics. You know, I think there was a lot of overlap there of how do we directly impact healthcare, but then also what are the indirect values of having an athletic trainer, right? I think as a profession, there's opportunities to be better advocates via both direct and indirect value and revenue. I'm curious, Daniel, as we move forward in post-COVID life, what do you think is going to happen to athletic trainers and physician practice? Do you think COVID has been a detriment to that practice setting? Do you think it's been an opportunity for us to really show our value, like you discussed, and really grow that practice setting for the profession? Where do you see ATs and a physician practice going post-COVID?
Well, it's hard to say, you know, what COVID-19 is going to do to athletic trainers and physician practice. I really don't see it changing anything. Sure. I think what we're doing now is, I think a lot of hospital systems have lost millions of dollars and they're trying to find ways to make up for that loss. So what I can advocate, you know, to my employers is saying, look, because of my skill set and what I do, we see more patients than somebody else at a different hospital that doesn't have an athletic trainer. You know, those types of things. So I can show the efficiency from that. And there's data out there and research articles to support that. So I think those types of things can show, look, like we're seeing more patients, we're creating more revenue, we're making up, can I say, for lost time, an example. So I think those ways, I think you can make, you can show your value in different ways. I was able to actually, we had some patients that we were just kind of rescheduling. We were kind of like, okay, we're just waiting till you get back in office. But even though they would be rescheduled, I would still have a conversation with them and say, hey, like, how are you doing? You know, and if they were like, well, I'm the same old, I'm like, okay, what things have you tried? And I was just trying to find a different thing that they could try, whether I was using ice more consistently, maybe it was changing up their home exercise program. Or sometimes they would say, my pain's gotten worse. And then I'm like, whoa, okay. So now I kind of turn into a little bit of triage here and saying, okay, let's get an appointment with Dr. Taylor. Or when we open back up, like you would be one of the first people to get back in. So kind of a triage, kind of use my skill set again there to understand what's significant and what's can be delayed. But again, at the end of the day, you know, I think you can kind of take anything and kind of make sure that you use your skill set. I think hospitals will appreciate that.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's a great point. You know, as we continue to analyze COVID and what it means for the profession, you know, we unfortunately saw athletic trainers across the country being furloughed and losing their jobs. You were able to survive all that. What do you think was the key component to you not being furloughed? You know, as we hear case studies across the country of ATs advocating throughout their furlough. But they still happen. What do you think was your saving grace?
Franciscan Alliance. Yeah. I mean, to work for an organization that cares about their people and cares about their employees, is huge. to keep me on. Like they didn't have to. They could have furloughed a lot of people. They could have laid off a lot of people, and they decided not to. So for a hospital organization to do that is tremendous, and I was very blessed and continue to be very blessed to work at Franciscan, a great organization to work for. So, you know, I kind of give that all to Franciscan for keeping me on and allowing me to do these things. But again, those types of things, like there was talks with Dr. Taylor maybe having to be reassigned, or even our front desk may have been reassigned. And I was willing, I mean, for an organization to keep me on when they could have furloughed me, I was willing to do whatever I needed to do, whether that was screening patients or that was working on the floor. I was willing to do that. But one of the things I was thinking when, if Dr. Taylor would have been gone, is I could have used, again, used my skill set by triaging these phone calls and kind of managing the practice from there. So that would have been a big benefit if he would have had to work over in the hospital setting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What's the relationship like between you and in referring ATs, right? So if I'm an AT in the greater Franciscan network or area, and I need to refer to Dr. Taylor, am I calling Dr. Taylor? Am I calling you? And what's that going to look like now that we enter the new normal post-COVID?
Yeah, well, I hope athletic trainers that have interacted out at the, maybe at the high school setting, even the collegiate setting, know that I try to communicate the best I can with them. Again, my experience in the high school setting, and Scott, you probably know this just as well, that you'll have a student athlete, you're at, you know, practice, and they go, yeah, I went to the doctor yesterday for my elbow pain. And you're like, okay, well, where's my no? And they're like, well, I don't have one. I'm like, okay, well, you're not practicing today. Right. Sure. And so one of the things that I, when I took into this new role, I said, I'm going to be that person that communicates to them because I know what it's like to be there and not have that information. Sure. So if athletic trainers, again, I always, I'm like, hey, email, like email is the best way to get a hold of me. And I tell them, hey, just email me if you have a question. I will email you. Again, I make sure there's no HIPAA violations, but I just say, hey, so-and-so, XYZ, here's what happened. That way they're aware, and then they can follow up with that patient later. Most of the time, I just tell them to call our main office, and we can get people in. One of the nice things that we're doing now is 3 days a week, we're running our orthopedic walk-in clinic. So anyone with acute injuries. So I'm kind of encouraging athletic trainers in the Indianapolis area, surrounding area. If you have somebody that maybe gets hurt, maybe at soccer practice and it's 3 p.m., send them on over. We can get an x-ray. Dr. Taylor will do the evaluation. We'll come up with a game plan from there. And so that's a really beneficial thing to have. So,
yeah, I think that's great. You know, as we look at, especially your practice and physician practice, like ATs can provide so much value and benefit. Because my guess is in that urgent care walk-in, the first person they're going to see is an athletic trainer, just like they'd walk into an athletic training room. So I'm curious what you think we can do, or what motivated you to join the physician practice? And then two, what can we do to grow that setting for the profession?
Yeah, so like any graduate about ready to get done with grad school and, you know, my GA, you know, my graduate assistantship was going to be over. I was like, okay, I need to kind of find a job. And I was looking at the secondary school setting because I thought, okay, that's what I know. That's what I'm comfortable with. I feel like I've gotten really good with it. But then I kept seeing all these jobs pop open for physician practice. And I've always been open to any setting. And so I thought, well, it must be a sign if all these jobs are, popping up, you know, so I applied, and Franciscan was a great fit, and Dr. Taylor is a great fit. Obviously, one of his, you know, he is an athletic trainer as well. He did his undergraduate in athletic training. So I knew that he was going to know my skill set and know my value within the practice. And so I think that was really beneficial. How we can grow athletic training in the physician practice, I think it's, there's so many ways to grow that. I think there's still orthopedic and sports medicine physicians that don't have athletic trainers. And then obviously, so there's a lot of doors there where we can educate them on, like, look, you can see more patients, you can have more revenue into your hospital, into your clinic, whatever that may be, especially these, you know, private practices, right? I mean, they are, they are really struggling because they, you know, it's a group of 10 physicians or so, you know, right? And they make all the money, and that's how they, you know, bring home a paycheck. So utilizing an athletic trainer where you can increase patient load and increase value there, I think is really beneficial.
Sure.
I think one of the things that is going to become really beneficial, kind of, I would say, I'm going to still call it the physician practice, but kind of more thinking orthopedics, is an athletic trainer working in surgery. I actually was at, when I was over in Illinois, I was observing one of my patients that had an ACL reconstruction. And then I also had an athletic training student that was there as well. She shadowed a few surgeries with an orthopedic physician. Afterwards, we were just happened to be back at the high school. And I said, was there anything in there that the physician assistant did that you couldn't do? I said, obviously you're going to have to learn a couple things here and there, but I said, is there anything? And she's like, no, not really. She's like, the only thing maybe like suturing, which is now something becoming more commonplace. So I think utilizing an athletic trainer, whether it's an athletic trainer and a PA, or whatever that case may be, there's a lot of combinations there, but you can utilize the athletic trainer in surgery. And I think that's going to be a really big benefit going forward.
Yeah, especially as we look at the new CADI standards, right? Suturing and hanging IVs, those are all going to be part of our skill set. And again, back to our comment earlier about the practice, that's where reviewing those practice acts as the new CADI standards come out are going to be so critically important, is to make sure that we're equipping athletic trainers to work at the highest level of their skill set from their training in each and every state across the country. So and right now in Indiana, we're blessed. But again, we're going to have to look at that in the next couple of years and make sure that we're able to allow what you just mentioned, to make sure that our ATs can work at the highest level within it, within orthopedic surgery. So a question I hear all the time is, do I need another certification? I think there's an OTC certification or something like that to work in a physician practice. Give us the inside information. Do we need another certification to work in a physician practice?
I would say, is your athletic training certification and license not good enough? You know, to me, and I think it's going to be state dependent on that answer. I think for the state of Indiana, absolutely not. You do not need that extra credential. There's two of them. There's the OTC, and then there's an OPE one as well. You know, for me, those, if you kind of look at the qualifications to get those certifications, you're really just taking another test and paying money every year, which, you know, you're paying, you know, more money and doing the things that you need to do for your athletic training credential. I know for the OPE, you can use your same 50 CEUs that you use for the BOC. It's convenient, but I don't think necessarily you need that. I think there's going to be athletic trainers that maybe disagree with that, but I don't want to devalue my certification, my license, to do something else. If I wasn't an athletic trainer, yeah, I might go after another certification to be maybe an ortho tech, or, you know, to be an MA or something like that and work in a sports medicine practice. But I don't think the athletic trainer needs that. I think our skill set speaks for itself. Our credential, our license speaks for itself. So I'm going to put a hard no that you do not need another certification. I will say that if you want to do, like if you, like for example, I did a casting course and it's by the individuals that do the OPE exam. So I think having the course and doing a course and learning more is good, but to have another certification just put letters behind your name, that's not really beneficial. I have the best, I guess that'd be six letters. I have the best six letters behind my name. So
yeah, I think that's an interesting point you make of when we look at these other certifications, does it devalue what we truly can do with our ATC certification? And I know I have colleagues in Illinois who have to get an OTC certification to work in surgery. So to your point, we're kind of hamstrung by state licenses and things like that. But I think that's something we all need to ponder as we wonder, do I need another certification? Well, what is that certification going to do that I can't do with my ATC certification? I think it's the same thing for a certified personal trainer and things like that. Do you truly need that as an ATC, or can you do that work with your ATC certification? So I think that's a really excellent point of, as we look at continue to add value to the profession, let's be sure not to devalue the credential we get to be in this profession. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, Daniel, as we look to as we look to the future and look to wrap up this podcast, COVID's here. It's changed healthcare forever. The way we know it, the way we deliver healthcare until we develop a vaccine or a cure for COVID, we have new rules to play by. What's that going to do to you? What's that going to do to the profession? And what do you think long-term, like what's the long-term ramifications of this virus that is still very active across our country and across our state?
Well, like I mentioned before, many organizations, clinics, hospitals, you know, with a loss in revenue, they're looking ways to, how can we make up for lost money, and trying to do different things. And sometimes athletic training might be, especially in an outreach setting, might be an easy cut to the budget. Even though we all know as athletic trainers, like, you know, to high school to not have an athletic trainer, right? And so they don't have athletic training services and they don't have healthcare, which could increase healthcare cost overall, right? We know the value of ourselves. It's about advocating that on a daily basis to our employer. So I think sometimes that might be an easy budget cut. I think moving forward, I think specifically in the physician practice, one of the things that we've talked about is we don't really know where and what's going to happen with this second wave. Are we going to be on another shutdown? Are sports going to get canceled in the fall? Like there's a lot of unknowns. But one of the things that we want to do and that we've talked about is continuing using virtual visits, not just during a shutdown, but at any point, right? So, for example, like we are today, just being able to get on, and so maybe an individual that can't take off a whole day of work to go to an office visit, right? Maybe their employer will give them 15 minutes, and then they can do their office visit and then get what they need and then move on with their day. Or a busy parent home with, I'm a lot of parents, you know, during the shutdown, right? Having, you know, maybe a few kids around, and then you're like, I don't even want to get out. I don't really even want to get changed. Like, I just want to be here. Right. So then they could have their office visit. It's like, there's so much convenient to that. And I think because of virtual visits have been around, telehealth has been around, I think just now in our society, it's going to become one of those norm things to do. But those easy visits, or people can't come in, or there's a, you know, they can't get to the house or the office or anything like that. So there's going to be a really benefit there. So I think there's going to be a lot of unknowns, and we're all trying to figure those out, but we just don't know until it happens. But I think we're going to be better healthcare providers. I think we're going to be a better society because of all this, and making sure that we're keeping each other healthy and safe.
Yeah. You know, and the IATA, our website, IATA.org, IATA-USA.org, has some really great resources, both telehealth and return to sport for our sport ATs, that we would be remiss if we didn't recognize as well. So, Daniel, I appreciate it. I think that was a world of advice in here, and a world of wisdom that you just shared with everybody. And you know, every practice setting that we're in is different, but like we talked about, what you're doing from a PPE standpoint, from a social distancing standpoint, from a clinic flow standpoint, I think there's real application to the collegiate setting and the high school setting. So I'm optimistic that listeners across the country will be able to glean some wisdom from what you shared with us. So thank you again. We appreciate it. We appreciate what you do for your patients on a daily basis, and keep you and your staff and patients healthy.
Thanks for having me on, Scott.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Indiana Athletic Trainers Association podcast, hosted by the Young Professionals Committee. The IATA would like to thank elite sponsor Methodist Sports Medicine and bronze sponsors Ultra Ankle and Myotech. Be sure to follow the IATA on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube for information on any upcoming events.